Welcome to Business Beyond Borders, the go-to podcast for CPA firms seeking transformative insights. I'm your host, Lawrence Whittam, and with each episode, we'll uncover key insights, best practices, and invaluable resources tailored for CPAs. From trending strategies to diving deep into outsourcing and offshoring, our experts will help in all areas of your business. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Business Beyond Borders. So we have a cool episode today with a business owner, Holly Clawson, who I've known for a number of years from the Profit First Professionals Group. And again, she runs a very successful bookkeeping and accounting firm, really, for businesses. And she's been very successful in exploring the outsourcing route as well. So we're going to dig in a little bit to what is she doing right to make sure she's maintaining and attracting great talent for her firm, and what she's doing differently. And this is something that other firms can now tap onto as well. So really appreciate you sharing that, Holly. And also looking at what is she doing with her outsourced talent as well? How is she treating them? And what are some of those best practices that she can advise you on to really implement in your firm to have a more successful incorporation with the outsourced team? So, Holly, very nice to see you. Thank you for joining.
Thanks for being here. I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Now, do you want to just start off giving everyone else a bit of an introduction about who you are, your business, sort of who you cater to as well, just so that everybody gets a good insight into what you've built?
Yeah. So I am Holly Clawson. I'm the founder of Sum of All Numbers. We are, like you said, bookkeeping, virtual CFO services only. We don't do taxes. We don't do payroll. And I started the company in 2006 as an independent bookkeeper. I've grown it since then. I've grown it organically, but then also through acquisitions. We've acquired five, working on our sixth acquisition right now. So grew it to the point that in 2020, I was able to step away from the business and didn't work. I was retired for 3 years and had two babies in the process. And then I just came back to work very part-time last year to acquire a business and help with that transition. And then now I'm back more involved now as the visionary. So we run on an EOS system. But so I'm the visionary of the business. I don't do any of the implementation. I just come up with the big, hairy, audacious ideas and then make other people implement them.
So. And it's great. I mean, I think that's a big differentiator as well, though, that is probably partly to do with your growth, right? I mean, it's working on the business rather than in it in a lot of cases. And you were able to separate yourself entirely at one point, which is great. And something that I think a lot of professionals struggle to do in a lot of cases. So maybe can you start there? Maybe just because I think that's very an important piece to it. Can you share how you took even steps to do that, right? From a transition of doing everything to really separating yourself entirely, because that's quite a big step.
Yeah. So I knew that I did not want to be part of business from day one. Like, that's why it's called Sum of All Numbers and not Holly Bookkeeping. And so I knew that that would be my goal long term, that I wanted to, you know, be able to sell the business or step away from it or whatever. So everything I've done from the beginning got me to that point. So, and all when I was hiring, the decisions that I would make would be, where is my weakest link? Where am I not succeeding or not doing the best? Or, you know, where could I hire somebody where the business is struggling? And so every time I hired somebody, it was with that in mind. And I've always said, I want to be the dumbest one in the room. Like, I want to make sure that I am hiring people that are way better at their jobs and way smarter than I am, because I don't want to be the one that everybody relies on to come to me to do. Yeah. And so from 2006 to 2020, we did that. Like, we had huge growth until about 2014. We took it from zero to over $1 million in revenue, which for a bookkeeping business at the time was very small. Like, that was big. Like, when I started this company, first of all, there's no cloud. Second of all, there was like no large bookkeeping only companies out there. And so the fact that I even wanted to hire more than one bookkeeper to work for me was pretty audacious.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I built it to that. And then from 14 until 20, I really focused on building a team that could keep the business running, that we had the right people in the right seats, that they could do what they needed to do. And I didn't have to have everyday instructions for there. We had some, family health issues that came up along the way for both my husband and myself. And so I had practices along the way of like, in 2016, I stood in front of my team. I said, my husband has to have a kidney transplant and my sister is donating to him. So I'm out. Like I have 6 weeks that I have to be the one to take care of my husband and my sister, who would also be staying at my house during that process. And so I said, you guys have 6 weeks to not run this business into the ground. Like, I hope to come back and everybody can still have a job because it's still operating. Yeah. And not only did they do it, but they grew it. Wow. And so that was a good test to see if it was possible. And then the next year I donated a kidney. And so then I said, I'm really out this time because not only am I going to be having surgery, but I have to take care of myself and recover. And so I did it that a year later. So those were good tests to see if I could really walk away. And then after that, I worked on finding somebody that could take over the company as the CEO. So Michelle Scribner stepped in as CEO in 2020, right as COVID hit. And I was going through a divorce and I just did not have the bandwidth to take care of the business, both emotionally and the 2020 COVID crisis, like all of it just was like, I have to step out. I can't do this. And so she stepped in and she took it over and she's ran it for the last, we're going on four years now. So,
And I appreciate you being so open and sharing all that as well. And now, and obviously a huge element to that, it comes with trust, right? And is making sure that, again, your team steps up when they need to step up, but also you want to keep that team long-term, right? Obviously, they've clearly shown themselves that they care for the business as well. And you were able to teach them or bring them in and create a culture where they do care about the business and they care about the success of it. So can you share maybe some of those areas that you believe that, and it's not just about an individual, but how you sort of built that good culture where you found the right people that were willing to do that and how you invested in them to make sure that they invested in your business to that extent as well?
Yeah, for sure. So we are virtual, 100% virtual company. So we've been virtual from day one. Well, when I started the business as an independent bookkeeper, I was running around the San Francisco Bay Area from client to client to client to client. And I quickly realized this is horrible. Traffic in the Bay Area is awful. Like I could only work on one or maybe two clients a day. Then I'd have to come back to the office and finish some extra work. And so I started hosting work in the cloud on a server before that was like even a thing. My computer guy was like, hey, I could host this computer. And I was like, I can print to it? Like, this is fantastic. I didn't know this was a thing. And so we've been virtual. So that's been a big draw for our team is that, we've hired work at home moms from pretty much 2008 when I hired my first employee. And then we've tried really hard to build that culture around team and being, even though we are virtual, like we have Monday morning huddles, we're all always available on Slack. We have quarterly meetings in person. We do annual retreats. So we've worked really hard to build that culture. COVID was hard for us because we were used to getting together in person, which obviously is for everybody. And so for 3 years, our culture kind of struggled because of that, because we got out of the habit of getting together in person during 20 and 21, and then getting back into that was difficult. And so, but we've gotten back to that. And that's a big part for us is that, we act like we're in an office, even though we're not. But then we offer the flexibility for people to be able to work when they want. And I mean, they have certain hours parameters that they have to work in, but if they have to take off to go to their kids' field trip or to go to a soccer game or, they can do that. So, and then we offer unlimited paid time off and we offer a lot of benefits, along with, the work from home side of things and that team culture.
Now, when you're doing that, let's say the in-person piece, because you mentioned something that is quite important there. And again, I generally harp on this quite strongly with when it comes to the outsourcing elements and making sure even though your team is halfway around the world. Like, again, you've got to figure out some framework to get FaceTime. And again, in a lot of cases, there's obviously, I know that not everybody wants to travel halfway around the world, but when you're building a team and as it's growing, like, you really need that FaceTime. You need to, because I feel like there's a limitation to the relationship you can build with team members when it's completely virtual. If you're just sending emails, especially, it's, you've got to get on phone calls. You've got to do these huddles. You've got to make sure that you've got all your cameras on, you're talking, seeing each other, because otherwise it becomes, the conversation is all about work and nothing about the actual personal side of things. And then there's a lack of understanding as to when these problems and things come up in life as to, yeah, I need to understand that. Like, yeah, they've got a kid, they've got school field trips that are going on, they've got sports games that are going on. Okay, I understand shit. They have to be there for that, but they'll come back and they'll finish it later on, right? And there's that element of trust, I would assume. So like, how often are you guys getting in together in person now, post-COVID and everything, compared to even pre as well, from a physical in-person side of things?
So we still are only on an annual basis for in-person. So that's, we're building up to the quarterly transition. We hired people that weren't expecting that during 20, you know. That's the other thing, is that the job market in the last 4 years has changed so drastically that we've had to make those adjustments. But we're hoping that by the end of quarter three, that we're going to be back into on-person quarterly. But like you said, we are a camera on organization. So we don't actually do phone, like, I mean, maybe some of our team does phone calls between each other, but we do, you know, we're on Slack and we do Slack huddles with the camera on so that you can see the person face to face. So we can share a computer screen so that we can, you know, have that personal connection. So, you know, you mentioned the outsourcing, we call it our offshore team. They're in India, so they get together in person as well. They all work from home as well, which is different for Indian culture. But they, same thing, their cameras are on, they're part of our team. They are as much part of our team as the ones in the United States. So that's super important for us, that they're on our team meetings every Monday. They have their own team meetings that they get together with. We do an all company meeting every Monday. Then they have their own team meetings that they see in, you know, not in person, on Zoom, with a camera, so that they can see each other and get to know each other. So.
No, it's very cool to hear that again, you're building and sort of reaching out, you're spreading your culture to the culture over there as well. And again, it sounds like now as well, like, they're getting the hang of it in comparison, because again, it's not a norm over there. So again, you've sort of done a gelling of cultures, which is cool to hear. Now, can you, before we dig into the outsourcing team or the offshore team as much, right? You mentioned at the beginning, you've done multiple mergers and acquisitions, right? And this is something where I think this is happening a lot more in the profession, and on a range of sizes, from small to quite large organizations. So can you share, like, from that cultural meshing, how that worked for you? Because that's where I think it goes wrong in a lot of cases, when two firms maybe have certain goals aligned and they're saying, yep, but this is a good fit. But then it ends up failing because maybe there wasn't as much of an investment into the culture side to make sure that everything worked out. How have you done it to be so successful in being able to do like five or six of these?
Yeah. Everyone we've done has been more of an acquisition than a merger, in the fact that we, you know, the leader of the other company is done and wants to get out of the business. And so, or doesn't want a team anymore and wants to go back to being just an independent, you know, provider, which is great. Yep. And so all of them have been that they came on as part of our team. We interview their employees. We interview their team members. We look at their clients to see, are they a good fit for us? And not every time we've not brought on all the team members, because some of them aren't a good fit for us. Some of them would be toxic to our culture, you know? So that's something we've held very important to us, that we just interview them just like we would any new employee, and then they can make the choice, and then we can make the choice whether they want to come on board or not. So, and sometimes they opt out too, because they, you know, for example, the one we're working on right now, they have people that want to work in an office. I don't want to keep their two offices that they have, and so they will need to go find new jobs.
So. And it's funny you mention it, because again, one of the big reasons that we see a lot of mergers and acquisitions, a big reason is the amount of access to talent, right? I don't have enough team members to continuously grow. I can't keep going through this talent career. I'm losing people. I'm not getting enough people and enough pipeline in to even keep growing. So now I'm ready to sell, right? So that's a big thing. Now, but you're sort of actually interviewing them and you're choosing to cut certain people out because they're not the right fit culture for your growth. But now you have to have access to a talent pool. And this is where we come to this offshoring element that you've built. So can you explain a little bit about that? So how have you built this offshore team? How long has the offshore team been part of your organization? And maybe just what initial steps you took, right? Because you really took a few different steps to where you are today, right? And you made quite a big investment over the past year to get to where you are as well, from my understanding, from our conversation. So can you share a little bit about that journey?
Yeah, for sure. So like you said, the talent pool is just different now, and COVID has changed not just the accounting industry, but everybody has been affected by what has happened in the workplace since COVID. But in the accounting industry specifically, we have lost about 300,000 people in the industry over the last, I think they said over the last 2 years. And so the market, it's very, very difficult to find talent here. The ones we were hiring, they either want a lot of money or they're not as good as they say they are. And it just became unsustainable for us, unsustainable for our clients. We've had a lot of turnover in the last 4 years. There's a saying in business that the people that get you there and here are not the ones that are going to get you there. So we've been dealing with that, as well as the people that started with us when I was just independent or a small business of 5 people are not the ones that want to be with us as we grow to a team of 100. We're at about 35 right now, and it's changed the culture of the company. Yep. And so some people have opted out to not be part of that growth too, which is fine. That's, what they want for their work career. But so in 22, we started hiring through an agency, outsourcing through an agency that we would interview the people, and we thought that that's who we would be hiring through an agency in India. We thought that that's who we'd be hiring, we'd be working with. And what was happening is the work was really good for a month or two. And then after that, the work would kind of like fall off, and, they wouldn't show up to our calls with their cameras on. And they there was like weird stuff happening as far as that team. And we worked with them for about 9 months. And then in the spring of last year, two of the people that worked there approached us and said, "We want to tell you what's going on." Like, they were like, "That you hired to work with us, but our company is wanting us to push the work down, so that they can be more profitable, so that I can go take on more work." And that's why the work that you're seeing coming from us and from the rest of the team isn't good, because they're hiring lower level people to do the work. And we're like, okay, this is a problem. So we had to make a decision. What are we going to do? Because the work was failing. It was not, just turned into a bad situation. So those two people actually quit that company and came to work for us directly, with not naming names.
No names needed. Nope.
So we started hiring our own team in India. So we started a company called S Plus, Sums Plus Solutions. And we hired our own team in India. It was rough at first. They had to learn who to hire. They had to learn how to interview people. We were mentoring them, but they were doing the majority of the work there because they, know the industry, know the market, know the people. And so over the last year, they've really refined that, and we've been able to build a team there. Now we have, I think, 15 or 17 there. I don't know, maybe 20. I can't remember how many we have in India now. That, we started out, they're going to just be our clerks. Like, they'll be behind the scenes. They'll just be doing the like grunt work, worker bee work, just doing AP, AR, and that stuff. And then over the last like 3 or 4 months, we've been really able to up level who we're hiring. And they've been able to, now they're stepping into the roles of account managers and they're client facing. And we no longer are putting a limit on the roles that they can have here at Sum of All Numbers and the work that they can do, because they're just as talented as, if not more, than the people that we can hire here in the United States. So we're very careful to make sure we pay them well. We're like, I'm like anti the, like, there's a culture there of almost slave labor that, you know, they're used to working 6 or 7 days a week, working 10, 12 hour days and not getting paid that well. And so we said, we're going to pay them well. We're going to offer them all the benefits that we can offer them. We're going to give them all their holiday pay. They're going to get the United States holiday pay as well. They get paid time off. They work from home. You know, and they can grow within our company. And so we've hired, you know, our team of 20, we are now offering it to the rest of the world, as far as other accountants and bookkeepers that need the same value. They get the person that we find for them. We find them three people. They can interview those three people. They can choose who they want to work with. And that's the person that they get to work with. We provide them all of the employer of record and the computers and all of that stuff. They don't have to worry about any of that. And it's working great. Like, people are very happy with it. We're super happy with it, you know, and you're getting your team at a fraction of a cost of the cost.
Yeah. And to go into a couple of the things you mentioned, I mean, partly with the outsourcing firm side of it, right? When you were getting started, I think that's a big piece, right? A lot of traditional outsourcing firms, they've struggled to create a transparent environment where they've actually been transparent with a client to say, hey, listen, I mean, we need to keep up leveling our talent. So what we're going to do is we're going to bring somebody else in to help do certain levels of work. And if those conversations were to happen, it could be a completely different situation to what you have now, right? But they've sort of ruined it for themselves by not being transparent with it. And also, they haven't put the right controls in place as well, because now that person that they've moved up that maybe would have been still communicating with you or collaborating in some way and being the face, they maybe weren't ready to necessarily have team members under them to be able to review, right? Which is where you saw the discrepancies in the work. So it's very important to set expectations and be, and again, from the outsourcing firm side, if you're going that route first, to really be very clear on, no, this, if that's the person that you want, you've got to work with the right organization that's not going to treat it like a BPO style business process outsourcing, which is what they did for you, right? In that sense. And really, and you've got to push for that transparency with them, right? And really just make sure there are regular calls and everything. And it's cool that you've taken that next step. You've built a team now, right? And it's yours. And again, these are elements, though, you're thinking about career growth now, right? So you've said, one of the things I picked up on was, we're not just giving the low-level work, right? Because again, what's going to happen is you're going to start losing people if you do, right? So you've started saying, no, I mean, they are very talented. When I've invested in the time and the effort into them, made a career for them now. And it sounds like from our conversation, you've got some very good leaders that are growing into their roles, right? They're not necessarily super experienced leaders, right? But they are moving, they're taking the initiative, they're taking those steps, and they're now being able to sort of create that environment, office environment for you over there, from my understanding.
Yep, that's exactly. And it's the lack of transparency and the lack of integrity that for us was the problem, because we're doing the same thing with our clients that, you know, but we tell them, when you work with Sum of All Numbers, you get an account manager that is your face, but they have a team of people that are helping them. And that's always been our business model, is that there's always one or two or three other people that are on your account that are helping them, so that if they're busy, they can, you know, somebody else can respond to you. And that's where the problem was with the company that we were working with, was that it was lack of integrity. And then when we called them out on it, they tried to cover it too. Yeah. So I was like, we're not playing this game. So yeah. For us, it's a big
loss. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, you get an idea for it, right? And it's very clear when somebody's doing a certain level of work and then it just drops off and stuff. It's very different. You can't just hide it, right? It doesn't work. So
for a loop, because we weren't expecting it. Like, yeah, as our first experience into the BPO, that was not something we were aware would be in that situation. And so for us, it totally threw us for a loop. Like, I can't believe that this is what they're doing. Now I realize that that's that business model. That's what they're doing. It's what we have chosen to not do, though.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. And now, can you share, as we sort of start to wrap up, Can you share maybe a couple of best practices that you've learned over this past year with your current team as well? Like, what have you really seen that was one of these, a couple of biggest challenges that you faced, I guess, just with the incorporation? Was it training your team about how to manage the team members over there from a cultural or a expectation perspective? Like, what were a couple of those problems that you faced, and what are best practices you put in place to help with that?
Yeah. So the cultural thing was a big deal. There was a lot of hurdles there that we had to overcome that we were not aware of. You know, hindsight's always 20/20. Don't know what you don't know. And so having our team members there that were our leaders, that were very open with us about, like, we can't do these certain things here the way you do them there because of the way our culture is. So that was big. Treating the people that work for us as people and not robots or, you know, nameless people behind a computer screen, machines. Exactly. That was huge for us. And what we wanted to encourage and what we wanted to provide to the rest of the industry as well, is that you get a person, you don't just get a machine. You know, we take care of them just like we take care of our team here in the United States. There's no difference. They are part of our team. We've, from day one, they're part of our team. Training them on, they know the tax laws, they know how American business works. But it's training them on how it is to be part of a team that is positive and encouraging. And, you know, some of them have gone on to get their, they don't call it CPA. I can't remember what they call it.
The CA, Chartered Accounting Degree.
Yeah, exactly. To get their CA. And so, you know, we've encouraged them to have that growth and to be able to move up within the company, which has been huge for them. And again, like I said, they get to work 5 days a week. You know, one of the things we started at first was that they were working Pacific time hours, which was hard for them because they were working nights. And so we lost a lot of good people because they couldn't handle it with their families, and which I totally get. Like, I would never work nights. I can't. I could never function like that.
And I think I think that's about 4 a.m. IST, Indian Standard Time, roughly, right? Around that time frame.
Yeah. From a Pacific, you're like 12 and a half hours off from us, which is also another mind shift to go 12 and a half hours. Like, was there a half hour in there? I haven't figured that part out.
Yeah.
So that part was rough. And so now what we've done is they work Eastern time, which is a good mix for our clients here in the United States and for them, because they start work at like 9 o'clock at night and go till 2 o'clock in the morning, or, you know, something
around
like that.
Yeah. Give or take.
Like that. So it's just, they can get a more normal schedule. They can be up with their families during the day. It's like not quite as rough of a schedule. I have a team members here in the United States that work that same schedule because it works for their families too.
Yeah. And I was talking to a manager, quite a senior manager over there the other day. And again, his life for the past 10 years has been a night shift. And he explained it in a sense of, he's got kids, he gets to drop them off at school, he gets to spend all day, like when they're coming back, he gets to spend the evening with them, and then he goes to work, right? So it just works for some people. And again, they've got used to it in a lot of cultures. But again, it's same way as you're flexible with your team here. I'm sure you're flexible with them there. If there are things to do, and okay, go do it. But then there's work to be done at the end of the day. Everyone manage your own deadlines accordingly and everything. And that, as long as you trust them, then it becomes a good environment, right? So now, no, Holly, really appreciate you sharing it. I think final question, just to wrap up, because I think this won't help, like, it's not a fit for everybody, right, from that perspective. But can you share the structure that you have a little bit, right? Because I like how you've segmented it with some of your team leaders and managers internally, and how you've segmented them, the offshore team as well, because you've distributed it very well, which has helped with that transition, in my opinion. So can you share that approach?
Yeah, so we call them silos, but they're teams that are, we have a lead client account manager who is controller CFO level person. And then we have account managers who are the ones that are really customer facing. They're the ones that work with the clients day in, day out. And then we have clerks underneath them, accounting clerks. And we have a couple different level of clerks as they come in to our team in India, because that's how things are structured there, where they have more like one level, clerk one, clerk two level, you know, more beginners.
Titles are very important.
They are very important there. That's a cultural thing that we have learned is that they're very important. They are very set on what their title is. And so each team is led by their lead account manager. So there's a team of, you know, 5 to 7 people that are working on any client account at any given time. And that's helped to create the culture across the company that they're not just one of 40 people here working at our company. And, you know, they are kind of working on an island by themselves. That's made a big difference for the Indian team. And then they have their own in the people that run the company there. Cause I don't actually own that company. They have their own company there. We're just their only client, which is a big difference if you are offshoring, is that owning a foreign entity becomes a big nightmare. So that's one of the things we learned when we started this, is that being the employer of record and owning a foreign entity as an American is not usually a good idea.
Yeah. Having full control over the team, the management, the structure, right? With an employment of record, very similar to a PEO, which is more familiar over here, right? I mean, you have full control. It's just you don't have to dig into like the legality side of it. You don't need to understand the payroll aspect. So it's a great alternative to it, right? And you pay a very nominal fee in a lot of cases to get that stuff done.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, we have somebody there that he does that all for us. So, but they do their own, you know, they do their own team stuff. They have their own Slack channels. They have their own stuff that they could create their culture and their team there. And then, but they're part of our company as well. So.
Cool. No, really appreciate Holly. No, lots of great information there. Really appreciate you sharing both your story, but also how you've been able to incorporate this global team now, right? And again, that's 50 to 60% of your team is offshore, right? I mean, you've incorporated that. And again, not to get into the details, but I'm sure that's had a huge impact on being able to pay people here in the US as well more in cases and hire more senior talent and also have a better bottom line in some cases as well. And it's not the most important aspect, but it's helpful from a business perspective, right? At the end of the day. So, but no, really appreciate Holly. And where can people find you if they want to, if they've got any questions, if they want to reach out, what's the best place?
They can find me on LinkedIn. If they want to email me, they're welcome to email me, holly@someofallnumbers.com, or on LinkedIn was a great place to connect to.
Okay. And I'll definitely post those links to the description. And again, thank you everyone for joining. And thank you again, Holly. And we'll look forward to seeing everybody in the next episode of Business Beyond Borders. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for tuning in to Business Beyond Borders. I'm Lawrence Whittam, and it's been a pleasure bringing you impactful insights tailored for the modern CPA firm. Remember, the world of accounting is vast and ever evolving, and we're here to navigate it together. For more resources and episodes, don't forget to subscribe and reach out to our experts. Until next time, keep pushing the boundaries of your business and explore the limitless possibilities beyond borders.